Blog Talk Radio.
Who are the latest hires in the NFL? Find out now on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. And that's right, it's time for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Hope you guys are having an amazing week like all of us here are. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again a little bit later on by the King, ATL, and Reggie Walker. But right now we do have the coach, Haywood Hill, in studio with us. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Doing just spectacular. The only way it could be doing any better is if I got an interview for an offensive coordinator for the 49ers. Seems like everybody is.
Yeah, they got a lot of work ahead of them.
Yes, they do. And we've got just tons of stuff to get into. And like I said, Reggie will be joining us just a short while later. We are going to review the four games that happened over the weekend. We're going to preview the two games coming up. We got Coaching Carousel Part 2. We're going to tell you about the new Veteran Combine coming up. And in Falcon Zone, we're going to kind of tell you, we're going to kind of break it down into categories. And because a lot of fans have asked, you know, in this situation, who's a good guy? Who's a good guy in this situation? Which one actually benefits us? So I've broken it down into a handful of different categories, and we'll just kind of see who the best candidate is based off these categories. But as we are waiting on Reggie to join us here shortly, Coach, did you happen to see the this week's controversial call in the Dallas-Green Bay game?
Yes, sir, I did. I actually had a chance to see that particular call. Based on the rule, the call was correct. I think that the interpretation of the rule where the fans have to understand is the problem came in with the fluency of the motion. Upon making the catch at the highest point, he was actually touched by the defensive back. However, when he lunged for the end zone, that was all considered one fluid motion as far as possession and control of possession to the ground, and that's where they got it right.
Right, and that's because I know you called me up and you asked me the clarification I was hearing, because there was three or four different clarifications going on in the days right after it. And the best one I heard from not only Dean Blandino, who's the head of officiating now, but also just forgot his name that used to be that Dean Blandino took over for, every explanation I heard was exactly that, was that it was considered one fluid motion, and that had it been broken up, then it could have been the fumble recovery with Dez Bryant getting the touchdown. But even if they score that touchdown, Do you think that was technically the game winner? Because there was like 4.5 minutes left. It seems like Aaron Rodgers could have drove down and scored again.
Well, you know, I think that knowing the type of competitor Aaron is, most definitely Green Bay would have been in a position to actually score again, if not still win it. But, I mean, that's neither here nor there, because they got possession back and was able to do what they did with the 4 minutes left. However, that was a good test for them. One for the rule and how close it was, and I think it might have shook them a little bit to realize that, hey, this is how quick you have to play every minute of the game, and you can't let up at any point in the game.
Yeah, and we'll bring this up when we talk with the game here in a minute with Reggie too. But do you find it odd that it happens to be the Cowboys on back-to-back weeks either benefit or catch the non-beneficial part of a controversial call?
Well, you know, stranger things have happened. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of conspiracy theories that out there would say for and or against. But I think when you're looking at the rule, you know, applied. And I think that the one that's only in question for me would have been the one that they had as far as the one in Detroit, as far as picking up the flag. I mean, I just have not seen that one before. I don't know if they have come up with an explanation for that one still just as of yet.
Yeah, they keep giving nicknames to all these different things. I haven't heard the nicknames for these in particular. But I did find it odd. It's not really part of the coaching carousel so much. And like I said, we'll wait till Reggie's on to really dive into it. But, you know, Coach, what do you think of the Cowboys locking up Jason Garrett for 5 years and coordinator Rod Marinelli for 3?
Smart on their part. That lets you know that Jerry Jones by no means is a dummy. And I mean that loosely when I say that, no pun intended for Mr. Jones to reflect. But he's smart enough to know exactly what he wants in a coach. He basically in the interview that I saw was very methodical and meticulous in why he kept Jason Garrett, and the numbers proved that. So it was a very good move on his part to take that out of the equation early, and any question in his mind as far as who was going to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I think this definitely benefits them because Marinelli would have possibly went other places, and the only place I heard Jason Garrett could have went was Atlanta, and I'm pretty sure Jerry likes his puppet in Dallas. So, you know, kudos to him on the 5-year deal. Hopefully he gets to see the end of it. I think he will. Jason Garrett is actually a lot better coach than people think, and even though we jokingly call him a parrot, a parrot or a puppet at that, for that matter, he has gotten results, and especially this year. To me, they overachieved probably by 6 or 7 games from what people thought they would be.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that what people fail to realize, and this is something that Mr. Jones did, he gave Jason Garrett time. You know, this is the result that you should get after investing that type of time, young coach.
Yeah, you know, a lot of other GMs don't give their coaches enough time, in my opinion. But as I see here, I believe Mr. Walker has walked in the door here. He drew the short straw and had to pay the pizza guy. We appreciate that, Reggie. But welcome to the show.
Hey guys, how you doing? Sorry, I'm had to take care of some other business. Make sure you guys eat.
Yeah, we usually draw straws, and since the pizza guy was running late today, we had to figure out who was going to miss the start. So. Unfortunately, it was you, but we appreciate it because that steaming Hawaiian over there looks pretty good.
Yeah, man. I know you guys missed me. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. We didn't get into any of the major topics. We were just going over Jason Garrett getting the 5-year deal, basically, because it wasn't an extension. He was technically a free agent. And Rod Marinelli getting the 3-year deal. And then we briefly went over which I'll get your thoughts on now. For the second week in a row, a controversial play in a Dallas Cowboys game.
Yeah. It was a tough one. I know that what the rules say about it not being necessarily a fluid motion or whatever the case is, or because it was a fluid motion. But I kind of felt like he had made a football move. But, I mean, again, I'm a fan. So I think they're going to have to address some of these rules. They call the Calvin Johnson rule and all of this other madness because, you know, how do you just rob a guy of a catch like that is beyond me. But, you know, hey, Dallas, in a lot of people's opinion, caught one, got away with one the week before, and they had to pay the piper this week. So I guess that's how the ball bounces.
Yeah, and then what the funnier part to me of the whole thing was the Detroit Lions Twitter account, the guy that runs that, or the girl that runs that, who took a few jabs towards Dallas, you know, hey, it doesn't feel so good, or hey, we know how you feel, and, you know, stuff like that. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was. I noticed a lot of those, too, as well, Jim. They were pretty funny.
Now, I do know a lot
hopefully
of
they
a lot
don't
of
have
people.
Those guys.
Go
I was
going
to say, hopefully they don't have those guys on the schedule next year.
You know, I'm not sure about Dallas' schedule. I do know that the Falcons will be visiting Jerry World, but I'm not sure who else they play. We'll have to check into that. But, you know, let's jump into those 4 games from last week. And quickly, we'll go into our picks because I actually did do the math and figure out who's ahead in those. Obviously, we had Baltimore at New England with New England picking up the victory in that one. We all homered out on Green Bay and Seattle. Both of those were able to move on as well. And for some reason, I was the only one on the Colts Kool-Aid train, and I happened to be right on that one. And I do feel lucky, but at the same time, I have kind of said something about the Denver downfall. But, Coach, you went 3-1. I went 4-0. I would almost think about retiring after this week. And, Reggie, you were 2-2. So our overall standings in the playoffs so far, Reggie, you are 4-4, and Coach, you are tied at 6-2 with me.
All right, we're down to the wild then.
Yep, it's down to the last two rounds here, and if you know my Super Bowl pick, my picks from here on out are pretty easy. But before we get we'll go ahead and do our picks, and then we'll get into reviewing the games. Let's start with Indianapolis at New England. Reggie, who do you have?
I'm going to go with New England. I'm tempted to go Indianapolis, but I think Tom Brady gets it done up there. I think it'd be crazy to bet against him right now.
Okay, Coach.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what I saw in the Indy game where Luck forced the pass deep in the middle of the field can happen again to him. I think he will be settled down a little bit more, but I think he has something that he wants to prove against Brady. I think that's where he'll make his mistakes. So I can't go against him on this one as well. I have to go to New England.
Well, we waste no time with this one this week then.
It's funny because it's true.
Yep, that the homer sound means that we homer out on that one with New England. It's nothing personal to Andrew Luck, who is by far the life force and heartbeat of his team as they are rebuilding. They benefit from being in a not-so-great division that'll be a lot better next year. I do feel like they've overachieved just like the Dallas Cowboys did, and just like the Cowboys last week, Indianapolis ride will end this week. I think it's time to see the showdown that I predicted, but Brady for sure in this one. And in the NFC side game, we have the Green Bay Packers at the Seattle Seahawks. Now, we all know I'm going to go ahead and say Green Bay on this one just because that's the way I picked it earlier preseason, but I really do feel like if Rodgers is at least 70%, I feel like this is going to be a shootout, and it's going to come down to if he can make Richard Sherman look bad and actually target him, unlike the first week of the season. I feel like Green Bay just has more weapons than Seattle can put a body on. Coach, we'll go to you next.
I think it's a no-brainer as to who I'm with. Again, my concern is Aaron, but I think what is going to happen in this game, honestly, guys, you're going to have some X factor step up in this game. I think the offensive line are going to block like the Secret Service. I don't think that – I think Lacy will have a very good game, but I think people tend to forget that they have Mr. Starks up there as well. So that's a 1-2 punch in the middle of the defense. I think if you can just keep Aaron upright, I think he's smart enough. He's most definitely cool enough to make the right mix with football. He'll be very smart with it, and I got to say, Green, it's going to be close. I don't give it. I give it under 7 points with the win, 7 or less.
All right, Reggie, it falls to you.
Oh, I'm going Seattle. There's no way Green Bay beats Seattle, healthy Aaron Rodgers or not. Those guys are playing lights out. That defense is going to eat them for lunch.
I would typically save this particular question I'll pose to you till the better half of the show, the Falcon Zone, but. In the off chance that Josh McDaniel becomes the head coach, would Seattle be your next newest team? You do
no.
like them a lot.
I'll go like Coach Hill. I just won't have a team. I'll shade towards the Falcons, but I won't have a team.
Well, and that's how I am. I tell everybody, especially doing this kind of show, that I have 32 favorite teams. It'd be like picking your favorite cousin or your favorite kid. Right now I don't side with either or the other. I enjoy talking about the Falcons and Jaguars, but at the same time, I really have no allegiance.
Yeah, I mean, I'll still have a slight allegiance, much like Coach does. I mean, for obvious reasons, but I will not be a season ticket holder. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, we will get into that a little while later. We'll get into that a little later as we. For Falcon Zone, like I said earlier, I broke it down into categories, and we'll kind of give the fans our take on, based off each category, which coach they should go after at this point.
Right. I would like to add this. Whoever wins between Green Bay and Seattle will be the Super Bowl champ.
I agree. Now I will. Yep. I definitely agree with that.
I'm 100% on that, not just because I picked Green Bay, but the NFC to me has been a lot stronger this year overall, and they've had better teams than the AFC.
Yeah, I don't think that you're going to get this. I think you're going to get a good football game both ways, guys. Don't get me wrong. But I just think that the team that comes out in this particular situation will win the Super Bowl. I don't think New England nor the Colts can beat either one of those teams right now.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with that. That's what I was just looking at is with all the weapons that Brady has, I feel like both defenses can stop it. And New England's defense has kind of been kind of skittish at times. And if they decided not to show up for a play or two, both Seattle and Green Bay could run up the score quickly. But
yeah, I agree.
But now that we made the picks, we to recap, Reggie decided to be different and be a Seahawks fan this week. In a way, I don't blame him, because had I not picked Green Bay preseason, I would probably pick Seattle in this one. But we all homered out on New England as well, or we homered out on New England, not as well. Hopefully, everybody catching that's following along at home can chart this out on their charts. We're hoping by next season, maybe we have some color by numbers or something that you can keep up with all of our picks. But let's jump into the Dallas Green Bay game from over the weekend. Now, we all know that Green Bay won because we just talked about they have the game this week. But what did you guys take away from this game?
This is Dallas Green Bay.
I took away the play of Aaron Rodgers just speaks elite quarterback. I mean, every time I think I've seen that guy do something, you know, as much as he can do, he does something else. I was also actually presently surprised at Dallas's play. Tony Romo acted like he really wanted to play and win this game, and it wasn't the usual playoff disappointment that I think a lot of people were expecting. So I'm going to be anxious to see, you know, these guys, the Dallas Cowboys, next year and what they can do if they can keep everybody. I know they got some issues, you know, some players to sign, and Dez White and possibly DeMarco Murray. But it's going to be interesting to see those guys again next year. But, again, Aaron Rodgers, he is Aaron Rodgers. I was also pleasantly surprised that Davante Adams, I believe that was the kid's name, that guy stepped up huge for them, and he's going to have a repeat performance again this week if they're going to have a chance.
Okay, for me, guys, I tell you what I took away from the game. I'm not surprised at what Green Bay is able to do. They have those X factors on that sideline, and that's why I think they're going to surprise Seattle with a few things that they basically had my game plan for. The second thing I took from that was I was very, very pleasantly surprised and had a lot of respect for the sportsmanship of Dez White and how he handled himself after the pitch. He did not go in a tirade and run off the field like I've seen him do in the past to show a level of maturity on his part, although, the call for me could have been questionable. He handled it with poise, and I was happy to see his professionalism and his maturity step up.
Yeah, those are good points, and I agree with both of you on it. The things that I really took away from this, and I'll start with Green Bay. Like you guys are saying, Aaron Rodgers just proves why he's the best in the game right now, and just has pretty much took the torch from. Just took the torch pretty much from Brett Favre, really, as he kind of exited to other teams. And just continues to make one-legged plays and just do as much as he could. But they decided to go back to the – they went back to Eddie Lacy in the beginning and towards the end of the game and were successful in running the ball, something Dallas wasn't able to figure out. So – I mean, pretty much my takeaway from Green Bay is that they are the top team in the NFC. And, you know, they should rightfully beat Seattle. As far as Dallas, their offensive line continues to impress me. For some reason, they kept trying to go to the running game, but what I liked the most was when the running game wasn't working, they decided to go away from it and let Romo start making some plays, preferably to Dez Bryant, who decided he wanted to be the elite receiver that everybody thinks he should be. But I think if this game was replayed, it would probably be a similar outcome, but I feel like Dallas learned from their mistakes, and there's potential they could hold on and win this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think that just speaking on Mr. Rogers, that's what I say when if you're behind, you have someone in front of you that you're learning from. Who best to have learned from than a Brett Favre in that case? And that's why he can make those type of plays now. It always has to be like that, as Reggie would always say, the it factor. You have to have that it factor in you. But then when you have someone that has that it factor and has been doing it consistently, like Brett Favre did for him to study under, he knows how to lead. He knows exactly how to lead Green Bay. And, again, you cannot underestimate the heart of a champion. Seattle is just getting there, but Aaron Rodgers has that in him and the legacy of Green Bay behind it.
Right, and I kind of feel like, you know, even when you're watching Russell Wilson play, he has that it factor, man. Offensively, they've got some things they need to cover this year. But much like the old Baltimore Ravens, that defense has been keeping them in it. So Russell Wilson definitely needs some targets. But I think they're going exactly where you're talking, Coach, as far as Green Bay is concerned. Those guys look for real, and they enjoy playing with each other. That's the other thing. I think that's what helped them later on is that they now enjoy playing with one another. So I think that's the difference that you're seeing now.
Yeah, they started to gel as a team towards the end there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you go back, guys, and think about what Coach Terrell said, he did everything under the sun that he could do to keep, you know, 70-80% of that team together after they won it. Because normally that's what happens. The team gets, you know, disbanded and everybody gets caught up in the clouds of them winning the Super Bowl. But then normally the team that comes back, I mean, go look at the percentages. It's very few teams that actually get an opportunity to repeat.
Yeah, definitely so. And like we said, Green Bay was able to pull out the victory on that one. And as far as who they would be playing, that would, of course, be the Seattle Seahawks that we just mentioned. But this game, the Carolina-Seattle game, the main thing that stuck out to me was, or a couple things, Seattle is playing like the playoff Seattle that won a Super Bowl last year. And Cam Newton looked pedestrian, almost below human in this game. I don't know where his good decision suddenly went, but Carolina was really in this game till I think it was late in the third quarter when they almost pulled the Falcons and just stopped playing hard or something.
And that's what I was actually, you just hit the nail right on the head for me, Jeremy. Remember, Carolina, I don't think that showed how bad Cam Newton was. I think it showed how bad Atlanta's defense really is. So,
right.
You know, and Seattle's a great, great defense. Cam Chancellor and those guys, man, they're like machines out there. So I was Carolina stuck around a little bit more early than I thought they would. So I was surprised to see their performance initially. But I knew once Seattle made their adjustments that it was going to turn into the game it did.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Cam had done all that he could possibly do with his body being in the state that it's in. My hat's off to him as a leader of that Carolina Panthers organization as far as the football players concerned. But I think they were overwhelmed. I don't think that they had everything they possibly could have had to even remotely get a shot. And, again, that was going to be the concern. Let's just say hypothetically they win this game or that was the turn of events. I don't think Cam Body could have just held up much more after that. And that's the difference in the injuries that he has, which he has multiple injuries, versus Aaron Rodgers, who only has, you know, a calf situation. So, you know, again, you know, when there's a big drop-off between what you have as your franchise player and quarterback and the guy that backs you up, that's the X factor.
Right.
And so I think he did all that he could do. He led that team. They fought hard. But, again, I think they were just out-talented.
I will say this, Jeremy, real quick. This is Carolina, and it's interesting that their owner came out and said that they will not be dollar store shopping this free agent, this free agent period. So it's going to be interesting to see what they try to do, and they know they need some weapons. But I think they really showed, this game showed how much they really missed Steve Smith. I think if Steve Smith's in that game, I won't say they would have won that game, but it would have been a lot tougher for Seattle if they would have had that guy on the other side.
Yeah, I would agree. And I actually think they would have more than likely put Cam Chancellor on him. And if you would have moved Cam Chancellor from what he did, then we wouldn't have saw some of the crazy, amazing MVP-like plays that he made. So I almost forgot about that. I'm kind of glad you kind of reminded me of that, Reggie. What do you guys think of the play of Cam Chancellor? I mean, especially on that one extra point or field goal or whatever it was where he jumped over the line twice, and if not for he almost blocked the second one. Have you ever seen anybody do that?
I have not personally seen that done, but it was very impressive. I had to rewind it and take a look at it because I know that, I believe, and Coach, correct me, I think the rule says you cannot touch anybody when you do that. You can't use anything to propel yourself, which makes it even more spectacular, something he did. I mean, he's the prototypical safety. He's that guy. I mean, I think you'll see a lot of teams going after player types like him or either making former cornerbacks that are that way. I wish he were a free agent. If he was a free agent and I was on it, I mean, I'd put whatever he needed on the table. The guy, he changes that team. I mean, between him and Richard Sherman, they changed the complexity of that team.
Yeah, Reggie, to answer your question about the rule, that is correct that you cannot have anything aid or assist you when you go airborne in that case. So what he did was just put forth all his vertical, and that's why in the combine they make you do a vertical. with that being said, the one thing about Chancellor that's amazing about him is that where a lot of guys have pregame songs or music or motivation, he actually goes and watches film on Sean Taylor, the former safety for the Washington Redskins, who he mimics a lot of his game around and alike. So, again, I do agree that if Smith was there at Carolina, Reggie, it would have made a difference, and I'll tell you why. Because Benjamin, their first-round pick, would have had someone to basically groom him and push him, and that would have been the difference maker, because I think that although Benjamin made plays this year, it would have been a lot different had he been in a situation where he had a veteran receiver like that who would have gotten in his face and pushed him a little bit harder as a number one.
Gotcha. Yeah, I agree. I don't even know that Richard Sherman could have done anything with Smith. Smith is just one of those guys that psychologically, and that's where I'm saying, even if not necessarily physically, psychologically, he's so intimidating. I mean, that's a guy that would have taken Sherman out of his game, I believe, at least in some capacity.
Well, it would have probably been a good fist fight between the two at least once or twice. But, yeah, like you're saying, psychologically with Steve Smith, you know, Atlanta's version of that would be Roddy White, but Roddy's not quite as physical. Now, he'll psychologically jab with you and stuff like that, but I think if he was a little more physical, he could be more of a Steve Smith-like player. But I'm also pretty happy at what Roddy puts up every week, so – you know, I'm okay with him being Roddy.
Right. And I was going to say Harry Douglas, this year at least, was a lot more scrappy than Roddy's been ever, I think.
Yes, he was. Which he could have been fighting for a job.
Yeah. And I also wanted to add that let's just look at what Mr. Smith did with the Ravens. I mean, he had some spectacular catches in some games, just showing that he still had it in him and he was still proving a point that he's a still viable veteran.
Absolutely. Those are the guys you look for. They don't make those guys in dozens anymore.
Yeah, I don't think that if he wasn't in Baltimore, if Baltimore's receiving corps would have been as good without him.
Oh, no, clearly Adam Smith. And I don't know if you guys know who shares the locker next to him, but that would be one Terrell Suggs in the Baltimore locker room. So putting those two veterans together definitely changed the dynamic of the Baltimore locker room. And to me, it was pairing those two and the leadership they provided this year on offense and defense that probably propelled Baltimore to go as far as they did.
Well, absolutely. I mean, not to mention Baltimore's defense. I tell you what, Ozzie Newsome, it's pretty hard to get that guy GM of the year just about every year. He had his team kind of torn apart after they won the Super Bowl and retooled that defense, where I think they would have had one, maybe a year drop off, if that. And they're right back to their dominating ways on defense. So whatever he's picking, you know, they need to send him to Atlanta so he can pick our players. I tell you that much.
Yeah, exactly. But as we talk about Baltimore, they did have the game with the New England Patriots. You know, what really stood out in this game to you guys?
I just think Baltimore ran out of time. I was surprised at that last play that Flacco threw that pass into the end zone. It's like almost the receiver quit on the route, I want to say. And I don't know. I was surprised to see Baltimore lose this game. I figured they would end up winning this game.
Well, I think that the receiver gave up on the route, and at the point that you can't catch, you most definitely don't let the defender have it. So I just think that he gave up on the route personally.
Yeah, I would agree with you guys on that he gave up on the route, and at the same time, I think Baltimore did run out of time. But what did you guys think about the new Belichick wrinkle in his game plan where Shane Vereen, I believe, reported as ineligible and just ran backwards from the line of scrimmage so that he wouldn't be ineligible downfield?
I mean, I personally think a lot of people say, oh, Bill Belichick cheats. He does. I think Bill Belichick plays the game. He pushes the boundaries of the rules. How's that? I think he knows the game so well that he just pushes the boundaries of the rules. And so I don't really have an issue with it. I think, you know, if you're tired of a guy being smart, you know, then outsmart him.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Reginald. I mean, you can't play checkers with a man that plays chess.
Perfectly coined, Coach. I couldn't have coined it any better.
See, we're going to have to work on action figures, and I think we've already got three or four good phrases for Coach on his.
Absolutely. You talk to him as much offline as I do. He has some phrases for you. But, I mean, again, people go back and forth and they want to bring up, oh, what's this gate, or they're cheating, and here's another asterisk. But, again, Coach said it best. You know, you want to play it with a chess master, you got to learn to play chess.
Yeah, it's very true. And, obviously, as we said, the Patriots were able to pick that one up. So we moved to the last game of last weekend, and it just so happened to be the only road team to win. And to me, it was not really a passing of the torch, because in a way, I don't know that Peyton really had the torch going into the last month. Now we know it was a big injury, but, I mean, we're going to kind of have to see how it plays out in Denver. But the takeaway I have from this is that Andrew Luck is like a miracle worker with the team that he has. Sure, he has weapons, but his offensive line has issues. The pass rush has issues at times, even though they had a high number of sacks that they got this year. There's issues all over the place. This team is still in rebuild mode year two or three or something like that. But they come out and show Denver that they were going to win the game and that they were the superior team.
Yeah, first of all, I have to apologize to Mr. Luck, because when he first emerged in the draft, I did not think he would be that guy. He has that it factor. He has shown me time and time again that he has that factor. And as soon as they get the weapons around him and the pieces around him that he needs, that guy's going to be dangerous, man. I mean, and that those are the types of quarterbacks that come around ever so often that, you know, Indianapolis got lucky. They had one, and then now they have another. I mean, that guy's the it factor. He has that it factor.
Yeah, he does, and also you have to take into consideration that his father played in the league. His father was a quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. So he's grown up understanding football and most definitely understanding what it takes to be a winner like that.
As with the Manning, so maybe there's something to that.
Well, and I'll hit on a thing each of you just said. As far as another team that went from one you know, rare quarterback to another. You got to look at Green Bay as to how Favre moves
absolutely.
On. They have Aaron Rodgers. So, I mean, that's two teams that got really lucky in that. And as far as what you were saying, Coach, if I'm not mistaken, Archie Manning and Andrew Luck's dad, I just forgot his name, his first name, were on the same Houston Oilers team way back in the day. And I believe he was a quarterback as well. Now, he was on the playoff committee for the college playoff, but left that right before the big decision to take a job with the NCAA. So the Lucks aren't doing half bad.
Right. And I mean, that kid, he's got, man, that guy's the real deal, man. I mean, and T.Y. Hilton. I mean, I kind of figured that guy was going to be good, but I must say, I did not expect this level. Reggie Wayne, they're obviously now going to have to find a replacement for him, but they definitely got them a superior number one on the other side.
Yeah, there's no question that they have a number one on the other side, and that's where you have those veterans that step in and know as their time is starting to slowly be removed from an organization that they do the right thing and prepare the next guy to replace him.
And I'll just play Fantasyland for a second for Colts fans here, but I'm gonna throw out two names that if one doesn't re-sign this year and the other one, I believe, within the next year or so, a veteran name they could look at would be possibly a Roddy White, or if they wanted to do it as soon as this year, possibly Larry Fitzgerald, who is currently on the TV above my head.
Well, I'll tell you another guy that they should really, really put some coin on the table for, who I believe is a free agent. And looking at, we talked about Denver a little bit and where they may be headed, is one Demaryius Thomas. That's another guy they could bring in there, and that would solidify their offense as far as passing is concerned. They'd be set.
Coach, as a former coach anyway, and especially defensive backs being your true expertise, I believe, how would you go at trying to attack the offense defensive back-wise of somebody like an Andrew Luck or an Aaron Rodgers?
Well, you got to disguise your coverages. You can't just come out and give him the things that he can see in the preset. It's kind of like being Houdini or David Copperfield, if you will. You have to show him one thing to then force him to play against another at the snap of the ball.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And for our younger audience, in case they don't know who those people are, he's talking about like a Chris Angel or a David Blaine.
Right.
I just told my age with that one, guys. I told my age.
Hey, I've grown up being a big Houdini fan, and a lot of my childhood was watching those NBC specials of Copperfield. So I knew who they were. But just in case our younger audience who neither of those guys have been around in recent years, Houdini for obvious reasons. So I just figured I'd try to help people out so we don't get puzzled looks or emails with parents asking us what we're talking about.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'd like to add that just a quick trivia with Houdini. Does anybody know exactly where he's from?
I do not know.
Is it Hungary?
No, as a matter of fact, I think that's where he's originally from, but guess where he actually resided in the United States?
Oh, I forgot. I should know that.
I actually lived in that city when I was there. He's actually from Appleton, Wisconsin, which is right on the outskirts of Green Bay.
Wow.
Huh.
Didn't I know that?
So, if he were alive today, then he could definitely be a consultant for Aaron Rodgers on how to be an escape artist from the pocket.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Although I'm not sure Aaron's
going to need him this weekend. He needs to conjure him up.
Yeah, he might have to. But moving on to the games this coming up weekend, and then we'll hit the coaching carousel real quick after that. But Indianapolis at New England. This is kind of new blood versus old blood, so to say. But I'm not sure Brady's ready to relinquish the reins.
Yeah, I don't see this as being a blowout game. I don't see either game being a blowout, but I definitely don't see this one. I think Indianapolis will compete because defensively, I'm not completely enthralled with what New England puts on the field. But I think this is going to be a good one. This is going to really show exactly that it factor that we were just talking about with Mr. Luck. I think he's going to make it an interesting game.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be, I think, you know, when you get down to conference championships and you want to win, you're going to see a lot of spectacular things happen in both of these games.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the offensive game, where the other one I think could be a defensive clinic. But you know, Andrew Luck's going to show, and Brady's even said he's impressed with the kid, and he. I wish we could be a fly on the wall to hear their conversations after games, but. I still think Tom Brady's still a top three guy. He hasn't really diminished his skills over the years. I think his team just he didn't quite have all the weapons. Now they're healthy, so I think unless – really the key people to me are the tight ends for these teams, because both quarterbacks love to go to them, especially down the field. And if the opposing defenses can find a way to shut down each tight end, then this could be a very low-scoring game.
I agree. I'm sorry, Reggie. I agree. I think that the tight ends play an intricate role on both of their offenses. But the question would be is if one of the two teams loses their tight end, would that guy that backs them up be just as good and can, you know, continue to be a part of their offensive plan?
Right. I think it'd definitely be more detrimental to Indianapolis because they have zero running game right now.
Yeah, and at least New England can trot out anywhere between 3 to 4 running backs and just see who works.
Right, or they'll get one to throw a touchdown.
Right.
Former quarterback.
Yeah. And in the other game, like I said, I think it's going to be the defensive clinic between Green Bay and Seattle. They both have pretty good offenses, with Green Bay having the nod there, but Seattle has the better defense. So we'll kind of see how this plays out, and I think Jordy Nelson – is actually going to see a lot of action because they're going to go at Richard Sherman this time. So we'll have to see if Cam Chancellor can clear a few more hurdles or Earl Thomas have to make a play or somebody else.
Yeah, I think, you know, they got that 12th man going. Beast mode is a little bit perturbed from you know, this recent rash of, you know, them harassing this guy, man. I wish they would just leave him alone. But I don't know, man. I think those guys are going to be up to the task this week.
You know what? I think that Green Bay might take a page out of New England's book. Don't be too surprised if you see some things happen in formations offensively that Seattle has not had an opportunity to see, nor would they be able to game plan for. Just don't be too surprised. McCarthy, he possesses some of the same things head coach in New England does in his playbook, trust me.
Now, is that insider breaking news, or is that just your thoughts on it?
No, that just pay attention to the game. Remember, I coined the phrase, you can't play checkers with a man that's playing chess. He does have some things, I promise you, up his sleeve that they have not seen that's been in the playbook probably for the last 3 years.
Okay, now I'm going to record the game so I can watch it multiple times and try to pick out each little intricate wrinkle that Mike McCarthy throws at him.
I don't think it's going to matter. I think you'll see Aaron Rodgers on the flat of his back most of the game, so I don't think it'll matter.
That's okay. He's completed a lot of touchdowns from there over the years.
Right.
That usually doesn't deter him. But, yeah, both those games should be entertaining this weekend, and real quickly we'll get into the coaching carousel part 2, because this thing is about as slow as watching paint dry or the grass grow. I think for the most part a lot of these teams are waiting for some of these coordinators to not be in the playoffs, so, you know, possibly by the start of the week the Falcons could call in a few more people, but we'll get to them in a minute. As far as the hires so far, San Francisco, who we all thought Adam Gase was going to be the new head coach of, informed Adam Gase that they are going to go in a different direction. They have promoted, I think it's the defensive line coach or something like that, Tom Sula. He's the new head coach there. Rex Ryan's in Buffalo. Todd Bowles went to the Jets. And as I said, one Jack Del Rio goes home, so to say, to the place where His parents have season tickets, and his brother is a security officer, so he'll be the Oakland Raiders coach. Thoughts on any of those?
Some surprises. More importantly, I initially went into all of this, and I think a lot of analysts and a lot of people did, thinking that Atlanta would be the first to cause the rest of the dominoes to fall. So, you know, a couple of surprises. I did think that Rex Ryan was going to be the guy in Atlanta. Once he signed with the Bills, I thought then, you know, Bowles was a definite lock, and he went in and signed with the Jets. I was a little surprised by the pick in San Francisco. I did think that they were going to target Gase. I think the Raiders got a good pickup with Jack Del Rio, and there's some talk about Mike Smith ending up as possibly the defensive coordinator out there. So I think that was a good move by Mr. McKenzie out there in Oakland to pick that guy up. As far as Gase is concerned, there's some rumblings now that I guess today he interviewed with Denver, which is where I did think he would end up. But then there's also some rumblings now that he could possibly end up as the offensive coordinator here in Atlanta. So, yeah, there have definitely been some surprises, but more around, I thought Atlanta would be the first to pull the trigger.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Atlanta would be the first to pull the trigger, and I think that right now, I reserve my Atlanta comments for, you know, a little bit later. But what I will say right now, as far as Atlanta's concerned, their backs are against the wall. I think what Atlanta has to have, I guess I'll just say it now, I think what Atlanta needs is a veteran coach. I think for what they need to do and where they are going within another year or so, they needed a Rex Ryan or they needed a veteran coach. Now, they did make some different type of moves of retaining some coaches that I was a little shocked got retained because you normally don't see that type of retention level unless there's an elevation involved. Which you saw in San Francisco. But again, I don't know. Atlanta, I think that, you know, there are some issues there. There's something with becoming the head coach of Atlanta that people are not just, they're interviewing for it, but they're not just trying to sink their teeth into it.
Yeah, I did find that as odd. I know that's a conversation the three of us have had in the last week or so, how, you know, we all thought Rex was the guy, and then he leaves and signs with Buffalo before he can come back for his second interview with Atlanta. Todd Bowles did the same thing, except for with the Jets. So, you know, we'll get into Atlanta in a minute. One of the rumblings I heard was that there could be a Chicago reunion, so to say, in Tampa Bay, where Lovie Smith is thinking of using Mark Trestman as an offensive coordinator. I think it'd be a little odd that the last two Bears coaches would team up on Tampa in order to make them better. But given their quarterback situation, and if you let Mark Trestman kind of take their number one pick as his pet project, so to say, whether it's Winston or Mariota, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Winston if Mark Trestman goes down there. I really think he could make Winston into, you know, a pretty viable option down there in Tampa, and at least somebody we'd have to contend with for twice a year.
Well, in actuality, Jeremy, Tampa Bay hired Atlanta's former offensive coordinator, Dirk Cutter. He's
that's
now
right.
Their offensive guy. So that's who they actually brought in. That's been a hire. I think they hired him last week. So now, he is the new OC for those guys.
Well, maybe Trestman would be the quarterback coach then.
Yeah, possibly. He's also been linked as a possible OC here. As in Atlanta, and I think the last coach we forgot to talk about, I guess, discussed was Chicago's situation, and that, you know, I know I had heard earlier that Fox was a foregone conclusion, former Denver coach, but I don't think the deal's done yet.
Yeah, I'd heard that as well about John Fox. Ever since Denver let him go, that he was almost a no-brainer for Chicago. But so far, the three jobs left open as far as head coach, obviously Atlanta, Chicago, and Denver. I'm just going to throw a couple names out there, and one I'm gonna kind of say a little more about in the Falcon Zone. But, you know, obviously John Fox wouldn't go back to Denver, and he's probably going to Chicago. But somebody with experience, you know, John Fox would probably do pretty well here. He has led the last two teams he's been head coach of to the playoffs and made them more successful than they were. And for some reason, I don't understand Doug Marrone, who opted out of Buffalo, is suddenly like just off the radar. Nobody's talking about him. And then obviously Gary Kubiak is the one I'm going to mention a little more about later on. But those are three guys who have been a head coach before that may get a sniff from Atlanta, or they may just be waiting till Dan Quinn is not the DC in Seattle anymore.
Yeah, Doug Marrone was surprising. I think I expected him to land with the Jets. It seems like that got some momentum early, and then it just kind of died out all of a sudden. So he's the one surprising one that I'm really surprised that hasn't latched on to anybody, and he could still end up in Denver maybe, I guess. But, yeah, he was the only surprise out of the three you mentioned.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes the strategy of some head coaches, sometimes you have to move slow to move fast. So a lot of them are stepping back so that they can preserve themselves once they get into the season with some of these young coordinators who might not have the experience, who might not pay in, giving them some more leverage as they move forward.
Yeah, definitely so. And as we wrap up End Zone here, right before we on the other side of the break will be Falcon Zone. We'll get into the best coach for each of the categories I have listed here. Real quick, kind of trivia question. It has to do with a picture I shared the other day on Facebook that I saw. It's kind of the weird parallel, if you believe in conspiracy theories and Dan Brown books, the kind of Illuminati thing going on with the four playoff teams right now. Did you guys see that picture?
Yeah, I did. I did catch that with the number 12.
Yeah, that Andrew Luck's number is 12, Tom Brady's number is 12, Aaron Rodgers' number is 12, and then Seattle, the fans are known as the 12th man. It's just kind of weird that 12 is kind of a central number here.
I like that, man. First of all, thank you for mentioning one of my favorite authors in Dan Brown. I'm always checking his site and his Twitter. I follow him on Twitter just to see when he's going to release the next book. It usually takes me about 2 or 3 days to read it at max. So thanks again for giving him that guy write some nice books.
Hey, I'm a fan of his as well. I've read how many has he got now? Five? I've read the first four.
Yeah, he's got five.
The lost symbol or something was the last one.
Yeah, the lost symbol is the last one.
That's the one I have not checked out. But yeah, he has some great books. Just to get off on a quick tangent about Dan Brown. Honestly, the one I like the most, I actually like Digital Fortress better than I do the other three.
Yeah, Digital Fortress was nice, but I'm big into the religious theories, I guess, doctrine. So I really appreciate that guy's writing. He makes me think when I read his books, and I like that.
Exactly. I'm definitely right there with that. Real quickly, in the last few minutes, who are you guys' favorite authors, people you, besides Dan Brown, obviously, for you, Reggie, people that when you see a book by them, you can't help but at least flip through a few pages or just you have to sit there and read the whole thing?
Well, I'm a Terry McMillan fan. I like the books that she puts out. She's one of those authors that, again, it's kind of that entertainment that you need, that break when you need a good laugh and to just kind of calm down from the day's work. She's one of my favorites. Trying to think of this other guy, John Grisham is another guy that I really like his books as well.
Okay, what about you, Coach?
All the authors of the Bible.
Hard to go wrong there.
Right.
hard to argue as well, at least for the sake of this show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The reason why I say that, Dan, is because we're talking about a text that's been around for well over 3,500 years, and each time you read, you can get something different out of it.
I would definitely agree with that. Yeah, for me, the two names that really stick out, the ones that, besides Dan Brown, which I apparently need to get caught up on. For me, it's always been Robert Ludlum, who did the Bourne series, along with, I don't know, 3 billion other books similar to him. And I was always a 007 fan as a kid, so I've read most of the Ian Fleming books, including some of the ones where other guys have taken them over. for some reason, I always thought I missed my calling as a spy. So instead, I got into sports media.
It's still time. It's still time, Jeremy. You can still go do it.
Well, you know, you never know. If I rub elbows with Kurt Busch, maybe I can meet his ex-girlfriend and get into the business.
Right.
And, Coach, if you don't know that story, that's one worth looking up.
I'll most definitely do so.
But that's going to do it for us on the end zone here. On the other side of the break, we'll get into Falcon Zone, catch you guys up on a couple news bits, and then for the most part, we're going to have fun with trying to pick the best coach for these categories here, and they're pretty easy for the most part, I think. But for the coach and the King ATL, and I'm the Impact. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Jeremy, the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And that's right, we are here in the Falcon Zone. Welcome back. I am Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach Haywood Hill and the King ATLian Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing outstanding, Jeremy. Doing outstanding.
Definitely, Jim.
As fast as you read books, Reggie, I would imagine you might already be halfway through the next John Grisham thriller, so I was giving you ample time to catch up on it.
Yeah, actually, I haven't even started on it yet, so... you still got some time to hit me with some stuff.
Okay, that's good. My wife and her siblings are pretty fast readers too. They always yell at me for taking 2 or 3 weeks to read, but I only do it usually when I'm riding in a car. It's hard for me to sit down and read stuff sometimes. But that's neither here nor there to the Falcons. The Falcons would probably rather I not read some of the things they write. But as far as just news going on in Falcon land. Reggie, is there really an update on the PSLs as far as do you know anybody who's mortgaged their house to pay for them?
No. As a matter of fact, I had the fortunate opportunity to go to the presentation for some of the people whose seats like mine will fall into the executive area. There was probably about 300 people in there that they were targeting that showed up, and once they did the flyby, and if anybody hasn't seen the flyby, please go out to AJC and take a look at it. It's phenomenal as it shows exactly what the stadium is going to be about. But that being said, they got everybody hyped, and then they pulled up the projections for what the seats would be, and you saw about two-thirds of the room get up and walk out. So I don't think they got the response they expected to get, so... again, they haven't released the PSLs for the regular sections, the end zone, upper level, so forth and so on, and I don't think they would be the exorbitant of what we have seen in what they call the executive area. But there's some pretty upset fans right now.
Well, and in a way, and this is in no way meant to be negative, if it comes off that way, I apologize to the people it may offend, but in a way, is that kind of a metaphor for the diehard Falcons fan this year, that you kind of go into it with a hopeful eye and then you see what they're presenting you and you almost think about getting up and leaving?
Well, you know what? For the sake of our association with the NFL and obviously not trying to to bring it a Debbie Downer to the situation in our relationship. I will reserve my comments for our private conversations. How's that?
I was just bringing it up because some people sent me some stuff on that. But, yeah, I definitely agree, and not just because of relations on that, but I always try to find the positives in things. And while at times the Falcons were a little disappointing in certain areas, there was a lot of bright spots. And, you know, once again, for the second year in a row, we really got to see some development of some of the younger guys and some of the first and second year guys. So, you know, the future is a lot brighter now that we've learned a lot about those guys.
Right, or as much as we would have learned under that coaching regime. And to that point, I guess, I have heard some statements from some fans that felt like maybe the front office was a little bit more about the fan when they initially bought the team, and now it seems like their direction has changed to more of a money-making perspective, if you will.
Yeah, I see that, guys, and I think that, I don't know, this is going to be tough on the Atlanta fan base. You know, Atlanta is a city full of distractions. People can find other things to do, and I think that inevitably is what's going to play the role in how this venture turns out. I think Mr. Blank is smart, and he's prepared for the future, but I don't know how the fans are going to feel about this over time.
Yeah, just my quick take on that is if I was mad and upset about how the Atlanta Spirit Group treated the Hawks, which they are now thankfully selling, the good Hawks, I'll give them the kudos that the Hawks are doing amazing right now as they lead the East. But the way they did the Hawks and the way they ran the Thrashers out of town by buying something, not putting any force or money into it whatsoever, and thinking it's going to make them money, at least from a business perspective, if you see what Arthur's doing, he is trying to make it a more profitable business and run it like a business, which is what the NFL is. At times, that means you may have to sacrifice a little bit of an entertainment value here or there, but for the most part, he's trying to keep the entertainment level up and the product good on the field while still making money on the back end. So it's a weird balance, especially in any business, but I think so far.
You know what, Jeremy, here's the real reality, and this is where I kind of walked the line a bit on that statement, on that reality of perception. If you're talking about a team that has a trophy case, or even a team that is a perennial winner, very different to come and announce these types of PSLs. When you're talking about a team that's never won a championship and that is coming off two back-to-back losing seasons, I think that's what upset a lot of fans. How are you asking me to pay this with the product that you have given me? So I think that's what the front office is going to have to correct, and correct very quickly. Otherwise, you know, he's going to have an empty stadium.
And real quickly, Coach, before you jump in, so in what you were saying there, basically, if this was what the York family over in San Francisco with their new stadium, Levi's Stadium, that they opened, if they were asking this kind of price, you could go, okay, the trophy case is pretty full. But given the results of the Atlanta franchise, that this may be a little much to ask.
Absolutely. Bring me a championship first. Then hit my pockets, and I think that is the position of many of the people that I have spoken to. Is you're putting this excuse my no, this is the coin phrase, quote unquote, you're putting this trash on the field, and you're expecting me to mortgage my house for it? No, sir.
Go ahead.
I guess
Coach.
The coach won't touch that one.
Well, I mean, you have to love the fan. And at the end of the day, all I will say to that is that, again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. Atlanta's a city full of distractions. There's a lot going on in Atlanta, and you have to compete for that business. And I think the competition part of it might not have been factored in probably some of that decision-making. I think that's what people still realize. Atlanta now has a lot of movies being shot here, reality shows shot here. A lot of things go on in the city of Atlanta. It's a convention center. A lot of conventions come and go. So, again, you know, when you talk about, and you mentioned it earlier in the season, Reginald, when you went to, I think it was a San Francisco game, where you had more San Francisco fans in the stadiums than you had Atlanta fans, if I'm correct in saying that particular game. This is what's going to make it difficult to have a solid fan base if they don't have anything to stick their teeth into, and that's being at the game.
Absolutely, and that is a factor, Coach. I mean, Atlanta, I think Mercedes-Benz just announced that they're moving their headquarters here. I know Porsche is getting ready to build a new center or a manufacturing plant where the old Ford plant was, or the old GM plant, I'm sorry, was. So there are a lot of corporations, and he's definitely going after corporate money. He's already solidified deals with some of the NCAA tournament games as well as the new soccer team, and he's going after a World Cup. And I mean, there are a lot of those that play into this. So it's obvious that he's going after corporate money. At the same time, again, if you want to solidify your fan base, you got to throw your fan base something other than what you're giving them and expecting them to pay this money. So it's going to be interesting to see how they turn this around. Right now, you know, they're kind of hurting from a PR perspective, though.
Right, because that Ferris wheel's been calling my name ever since they built it, and I've went to almost every attraction in Atlanta just over the years. Definitely for any out-of-towners or anybody in the state that hasn't been to the aquarium or any of the World of Coke, any of the great things we do have in Atlanta, make a weekend of it. Come up, catch a game. No matter what time of year, there's always some game in town anyway, but check out all the attractions for sure. The thing I come up with last week that I wanted to pass by you guys first was this thing where basically I've divided up a bunch of categories, and there are 7 different ones. Some of them are kind of serious. Some of them, not so much. Maybe a little fun. Maybe we'll go out on a fun note since don't want to get you too riled up there, Reggie.
Absolutely. I'm good. Yeah. I have accepted what I had to deal with. I did move up to the club level, and I will decide, you know, next season or the season after whether I'm going to cough up the coin. We'll see. If it's Josh McDaniels, we've already decided what it's going to be.
Yep, I was going to, for the sake of Falcons Zone, not mention his name, but, you know, you brought it up, so we'll let it go with that. But, you know, I did send you guys the half-serious, half wink, wink, nod, nod way that we could beat the PSLs, but that's just us personally. And
right.
We won't get into that here. But basically, like I said, I call this segment Best Coach 4. And what it is I'll give you the category, the Best Coach 4, whatever category I bring up here, and we'll each kind of real quickly go into the guy who's still out there that would better fit the category. And we'll start with the first one. Like, who do you guys think the best coach for Atlanta as far as the offense is concerned? Who is the best offensive coach we could bring in as a head coach?
Out of everybody that's left?
Yeah. I mean, if you know some CFL guys or even indoor, then, you know, by all means, we can go that direction too.
Well, you know what? Honestly, the guy that they're talking about now is the guy that I think is the best if he's going to make a lateral move, and that would be Mr. Gase. And I say that because one of the things that a lot of fans have been upset about, myself personally as well, is Atlanta, when they run the no-huddle offense, they are one of the most efficient teams at running that. And part of that has to do with a great deal of that actually has to do with the decision-making ability of Matt Ryan when he's facing these defenses. And coming off of who Mr. Gase has been working with and one Peyton Manning, if he brings that same philosophy where he now grooms Matt to do more of that, I think you can actually see a more dynamic offense under that guy.
All right, Coach, who do you think the best coach would be for this offense?
Well, you can't bring him in, but Vince Lombardi. it's going to affect a lot. I think that the problem still will be there with the Atlanta that they have now. They don't have a veteran coach. Matt doesn't feel that he'll find a level of a common ground to respect, but the question will be, who will he allow to really coach him? And I think that's where the veteran status has to come in. But with that being said, Gase would be my pick. So, I mean, as far as what you have left out there, that's available to you right now.
Yeah, I think Adam Gase, as far as a head coach that would help the offense the most, Adam Gase to me is – not the be-all, end-all, but he is by far the top candidate of the ones out. Even though I could make a case for that guy you mentioned, Reggie, but we won't go that direction because I like Adam Gase a little better. Next category, who is the best head coaching candidate that would help the defense?
I think the two they got now, either Mr. Quinn or Mr. Austin, could definitely come in and do some wonders with this defense. I think they've got some different schemes, and I tend to disagree with Coach a little bit from the veteran coach perspective, because what they need to bring in my opinion, is a coach that embraces competitorship or competition. And I think that with either one of those guys, the way that Quinn helped kind of solidify and anchor that Seattle defense along with Pete Carroll, and obviously the way Mr. Austin was able to come in and with the same talent take Detroit's defense from number 16 to number 3 overall, I think that speaks volumes to their coaching styles. I do agree that you know, Mr. Ryan does need a little bit more of a proverbial foot sometimes, but I think those two guys can get it. But I think, you know, Quinn or Austin, either one of those guys will do it. I also like Jim Schwartz, too. Don't forget he's still out there.
All right, Coach.
For myself, I'm going to stick to my guns, Reggie. If I had to take somebody, it would probably be Schwartz right now. I think Quinn has pieces around him, and I think that's what people fail to realize. They fall in love, but love don't love you and love don't love me, especially when you begin to lose. And I think that the situations that both of these coordinators have been in has helped them. Now, if I had to pick one over the other, I think defensive coordinator in Detroit probably fits better right now because he hasn't had as many pieces. The only downside to that is that this is his first coordinator job. So, again, you know, you're talking about players that are also playing in contract years. That's the other piece of this that has to be added to the scenario. I think a lot of it has to do with how well that person or that particular coach is being received throughout the league. How many people have gone after that type of service without HC being head coach attached to it? So those it's a lot of factors that go into it, guys, but I would have to say right now I like the defensive coordinator in Detroit a little bit better because he's worked just slightly with a little bit less.
Yeah,
from the coordinator's perspective, I'll give you one name, Jeremy. I'll throw this out there let Coach talk about this here. And that's one Mr. John Harbaugh, who was, before he took the head coaching spot, he was the special teams coach before he was given the job. So he never saw a coordinator's position. And look at what he's been able to do with Baltimore. Now, granted, he has probably the best GM in the league in Ozzie up there. But, I mean, again, I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, definitely as far as to help the defense, I do like Terrell Austin. And, Coach, I'll let you go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, I mean, you just said it all in one sentence, Reggie. When Harbaugh took over the reins of Baltimore, look what he had as a GM, and more importantly, what he had in leadership already on the field and in the locker room. That played a big role. Start removing some of that stuff over time, then you'll start seeing some different effects of that. And that's what I'm, you know, again, he's a motivator, he's a player's coach, but again, he inherited a hell of a football team.
And that's what I was alluding to is, you know, I think this is going to be less about the coach being the issue in Atlanta and more about the GM issues that I think we still have in Atlanta.
Right,
okay,
and
yeah,
splitting it up the way they did.
Yeah, I can understand what Mr. Blank did. He wanted to be able to quickly identify where issues may be, but, I mean, you know, football is not, even though it's in a corporate world, is not a corporate business to that standpoint. It has corporate factors that are attached to it. And you still are dealing with the human entity on a day-to-day basis that makes – it's a performance-based business. And so that's why I still will stand beside my guns about them needing a veteran coach because I think they have some talent. I think they are talented. I think the problem with Atlanta is they got to bring something in greater than the talent that they've had or that they have so that they can get over the top. So you bring in – let's just say Pete Carroll was to come to Atlanta now. He could completely change Atlanta around just based on who he is and what he's done in the last couple of years. That respect level coming through the door is what Atlanta needs to see right now. I think they'll go along with it. They'll buy into it some, and in training camp and preseason, but if they don't see immediate separation in scores and defensive categories immediately going in other directions, you'll find guys tend to get lax and lay off.
Well, you know what? Somebody else brought up a very interesting point to me as well yesterday. And speaking in line with what you were mentioning about Arthur and the way he split everything up, I think the respect factor is correct, and obviously that is plays an important role. But I think what Arthur Blank did, in essence, was say, hey, I am the guy now. I'm the guy that's calling all the shots. And you either going to stay or you can leave, and I'm going to make that happen one way or the other. And I think that is probably what's going to command the respect from the players, if anything else, is that you don't find yourself on the street. He is obviously very no-nonsense in his approach now, and I think he's sending messages to the players as well. Hey, I'm the guy calling all the shots now. Whatever you're hearing out there, I'm the one that's going to make the final decisions.
Yeah, I would agree with that because my dad spent quite a few years in the Home Depot Corporation and got to know Bernie and Arthur very well. And Bernie is more hands-on type guy, and Arthur is more the buck stops here. This is the way we're going to do it. And it works the way their partnership would work like that. But, yeah, definitely what you said there, Reggie, as far as the way Arthur has taken control. And then splitting it up the way he did, because the best way to see who the weak link of a team is to split them up and see who sinks and who swims. And the way he split it up, we're going to know pretty quickly where the problem is.
Absolutely.
Like I said, I like Terrell Austin for the defense just because and Ndamukong Suh is going to be good no matter what team he's on, but Nick Fairley clearly has seen his best days behind him, and he is pretty relevant in the defense up there. So if he can make him pretty relevant, I can only imagine what OCU Manura or Croy Bearman could be under Terrell Austin.
If they are still in Atlanta.
Right, because there are about 22 or 25 potential free agents, which is why they need to hurry up and pick a coach so that the coach can say, this guy's out, this guy's in, this guy's out, this guy's in.
Absolutely.
But next category, we're going to try to get through these real quick. Got about 10 or 11 minutes, I think, left. Who would be the best head coaching candidate that would benefit the team the best, the overall team?
I that's a hard one because out of everybody that's left, I think maybe if you were to pull a surprise and maybe bring a Jim Schwartz in,
mm-hmm.
Atlanta needs somebody with some passion. And I think that's what they like about Dan Quinn is apparently he's that guy. He's that guy that can kind of light the fires. That's why I think everybody wanted Rex Ryan so much. But at the same time, it's a coin flip with either one of those guys as far as I'm concerned. Keith Armstrong is another guy who they already have in-house, or maybe even Mike Tice are two guys that I think that they already have that could best for the team overall because they know the team. But if it's, between the guys that they're targeting, I think it's a coin toss.
All right, Coach.
I agree. I don't see anybody strong enough right now from where they are to be able to just come in and get them to just per se buy into their system. I just think that this year Atlanta is going to fall heavily on what they do draft wise and what they do in that area of free agency. That's going to make the difference of how well they sustain themselves. I don't see either one of them guys right now. They've been in good situations, but more importantly, they've been in great organizations that has built a lot of support around the coaching staff. Right now, to step out on their own, neither one of them just, right now just impressed me as that guy that can do that.
Quick answer for me, and it's based off something you said, Reggie, as well, that I agree on. As far as to benefit the team, Keith Armstrong, he's been here the longest, and he knows this team inside and out. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if suddenly they said he was the head coach. But the next category, who would be the best head coach as far as the city is concerned?
I think that guy's already gone with Rex Ryan. But out of the two left, I would have to say Mr. Austin in Detroit.
All right. Coach?
Believe it or not, it's going to be their offensive line coach, Mike Tice. I think that the fans saw the passion that Reggie spoke of in him. He already has the background. He already has the respect of the organization and the players right now. If there was a quick plug and play, it would be him.
Yeah, I think so. Between Tyson and Armstrong as well, just for the same reasons we said on the team. They've been on this team, and the Atlanta surrounding area likes them. Next category, who would be the best head coaching candidate that would benefit the new stadium?
Again, that guy's already gone. But if we have to pick whichever, I have to go with you guys as well as Tyson's concerned as well, because I think the product is what's going to sell the stadium out, you know, and get those guys involved. And I think, you know, hands down, he'd be the one to come in and make the most impact right away.
All right, Coach.
I'm going to be a comedian. You can't resurrect him, but probably Michael Jackson, because yeah, he's the only person that can sell out facilities like that. So, but on, you know, with that being said, I think that Mike Tyson's a guy right there that could fit it. I don't think he's up for it. The other two guys, I think the facility. I agree with you, Reggie. I think the facility and the awe of it and the amazement of it is what's going to sell it. It just won't be the average guy to be walking in and do it and experience it.
Yeah, I do find it odd that we keep bringing up, as far as the overall community and feel of the fans and the team, that Mike Tyson's name keeps coming up, and I'm not sure he's gotten an interview. But as far as somebody who's out there, I mean, John Fox, I think, would sell a lot of tickets to this new stadium.
I don't know. I don't know. I thought about that one, too. I think
I
Jim Schwartz, believe it or not, he's my sleeper pick, though. He's that guy with what he brought to Detroit and the kind of fire and energy he brought to Detroit, even down to the infamous exchange he had with Mr. Harbaugh. I think that's what Atlanta fans want to see, is more fight, more toughness. I think that's why I say either him or Tice would be some definite, those veteran guys. If we had to go veteran like Coach mentioned, those are the two guys I like to see them go after.
Yeah, it's one guy I would like to throw in the mix, and he's on no one's radar right now, but I think could immediately come in and make an impact. And who knows, he might be quietly on the radar, and that's Mike Singletary. I think he could bring that type of fire to Atlanta based on what he's able to do in San Francisco. I think he could come here. He's a likable guy. He's a Hall of Famer. Players understand him now. Maybe he wasn't connecting as well, but all of the players after he left San Francisco, look at where they are now. They put themselves in position, and they all, when they rewound the tape of their emotions and extracted them out, realized that he motivated them well.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. He picked great players, but he couldn't get it out of them, and that's what I'm afraid of with Mr. Singletary.
Well, and now that you mentioned that name in there, it may alter my last two category answers, but we'll get into them real quickly. Who is the best head coaching candidate that would benefit the tailgating experience? I told you we'd have some fun ones.
Huh. For that one, I definitely have to say Mike Tyson. Just watching that guy on the field. And again, that guy's gone. But the real guy's gone. But out of what you've got, you know, Mike Tyson, he's that guy that, you know, just Mr. Fun all the time, talks a lot of smack, and just looks like that guy that just hangs out.
Well, and Coach, where are you getting there?
Right.
I was about to say, these last two categories, I was expecting you both times to say, Reggie, that guy's already gone. Which could be your new catchphrase. But.
Absolutely. I mean, hey, he was the guy we needed. He was the guy we needed.
Yeah, and Rex would definitely be my answer for the last two categories if he was on the table. But as far as the tailgating thing, yeah, I like Tice. I like Keith Armstrong, because even though he gets after players, he still makes it fun. He makes people want to play for him. That's something that a lot of coaches have trouble with, like you said, with Singletary. As far as a tailgate as well, Singletary would be a fun one to have, because he is one of those fun-loving. He would almost – you feel like if you got out there early enough that he could pop by real quick to say hello.
Absolutely.
That and Kyle Shanahan, because he's just young enough to probably actually stop by and see what you're eating. He might be like, hey, all right, you got a whole cooler of those? Great, I'm going to have a few of those, and then I'm going to go coach the game.
I
think
yeah,
it,
I agree.
And, and whether it would be you know, our possible tailgate, or whether it would be Mark and the Falcoholics, or even Terrence and the Game Changers, he would be welcome at any tailgate that any of us frequent.
And we'll probably show up.
Yeah, he probably. No matter who the coach is, I'm gonna try to give the stand-in invitation to maybe drop by somewhere that we're at. But the last one, and Reggie, I'm setting it up. I might as well toss it in the air and put it on a tee for you, as far as your new catchphrase. But who would be the best coaching candidate for press conferences?
Wow. Again, that guy's already gone. But, yeah, if you keep saying it, I mean, Mr. Tice is that guy. I haven't really seen the other two guys in a press conference. I mean, but you know, just looking at Mr. Tice, I enjoyed him on the Hard Knock series. He was that guy after my heart, so I have to stick with him.
All right, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, again, I have to agree with Reggie that, you know, the guy that you wanted for the candid sound bites is no longer in the equation. yeah, I would have to say Tice. If you couldn't get Kevin Hart, you get Mike Tice.
Yeah, and wasn't Tice the head coach in Minnesota for a little while?
Yes, he was.
And
with the guy with the pencil behind his ear.
Yeah. And if I remember his press conferences from Minnesota, they were not quite Rex Ryan or Rob Ryan-like, but they were pretty close. Now, he won't say anything really off the wall that makes you just question if you just heard it right, but Mike Tice, I think, could be very entertaining at press conferences, and I, for one, look forward to a press conference that he would be a part of.
But, go
ahead.
I'm sorry. Other honorable mentions will be Jim Morrow Sr. and Dennis Green.
Yes, because both those guys are who we thought they are. And definitely would take us to the playoffs.
Playoffs? Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
I was about to say, I've been a little under the weather this week and just trying to kick this this little bug I got, so there's no way I could hit that note today.
Yeah, that was my little Jim Morris Senior rendition.
Good
Which
job,
you know,
good job.
Yeah, kudos on that one for sure. But that's, you know, that in the last 2 minutes here, I just want to throw this name out. With what he's done with UCLA in the last year or so, I don't understand why Jim Morris. It's technically not senior and junior because their names are different. But Jim Morris, the younger coach that is at UCLA, I'm surprised he's not getting a little more attention. Obviously not for Atlanta. He's already been here. But, I mean, the guy can coach, and he does pretty well, at least on the collegiate level.
Yeah, and I think Jim Mora is much like Mr. Meyer right now. I think he's comfortable where he is right now. I think, you know, he understands what's waiting for him in the NFL and the gray hairs and the headaches and the uncertainty. And I think he's fine where he's at.
Yeah, and I don't blame him. I think that's the reason why Coach Harbaugh is now in Michigan. It's a little less pressure. You get to work with the youth. And – you know, besides the angry mom that their little kid's not playing enough, you really don't have to deal with a whole lot.
Right. Plus, you get to get paid, in Mr. Harbaugh's case, you get paid better than most NFL coaches.
Get paid
exactly.
The salary of possibly two NFL coaches.
Right.
Right. And hopefully everybody had as much fun as we did with our little – best coach for. Maybe we'll try to figure out something for next week as well. You guys got anything else to add in the last minute?
Make the deal, Arthur Blank. Make the deal.
And I'd better hurry up and get him a coach. They're very close to the draft.
Right. And the thing we didn't mention in End Zone was the there's going to be a veteran combine where about 100 players or so on March 22nd in Arizona are going to be invited in order to try out for teams, basically a combine for veteran players. You guys think that's a good idea, bad idea?
I think that is the coolest thing I've heard all year.
I tell you what, unless you know that they don't think a bunch of kids coming out over the next 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's 2 weeks into free agency, which tells me that it'll benefit the guys that are question marks. But that is going to do it for us for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. I am Jeremy the Impact York. Appreciate you, Coach, and Reggie joining us this week, and we'll see you guys next week.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.